This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
You ready?
Yeah, I was born ready.
Yeah. My name's Nick Helm.
And my name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to FUBAR Radio and the midday slot. And you're listening to Nick and
Nat's
FUBAR Show Fan Club.
Radio.
Fan Radio Club. What's the first rule of Fan Club?
Tell your friends
about Fan Club. Second rule of Fan Club, please. For love of God, please tell your friends. My name is Nick Helm, and this is
and this is FUBAR Radio. What time is it?
It's midday. It's the middle of the day. And what does that mean? It means Daddy's been up for an hour. Oh God! How are you feeling today, Nat?
I'm a bit tired.
Yeah,
a bit tired coming in, you know. But I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm getting there.
How long does it take to get in?
It takes me, I would say, it took me today, not that long, 35 minutes.
35 minutes, that's not so bad.
Not so bad. No. How long does it take you to get in there?
About five minutes.
Yeah.
To get to the Starbucks.
Yeah.
It takes you 35 minutes door to door to get to the Starbucks. Yeah. It takes me about 5 minutes to get to the Starbucks. So, yeah. I mean, I could literally forget something at my house 6 times.
Yeah.
And it would take the same as you.
Yeah. Is that what happens?
No. I always remember just before. I've got my bank card on me. We didn't go to NYSA today.
We think we're not now. Cause,
You didn't stop for it.
I didn't stop. Did you want something nicer?
I would have gone in, and I feel a little bit unarmed and unprepared today because I haven't got my fizzy water.
A nicer story.
Yeah. And I think you're forgetting just how much that gets us through an episode, talking about our journey here.
But, it's true. We did 45 minutes last week.
Did we?
About 45 minutes.
Fucking hell. And also we haven't got the boon of the, and I say boon in every sense of the word.
The Michael Elphick TV show.
Absolutely. Not just a boon.
Yeah.
As in, what's the definition of boon? Natalie.
What's the definition of boon?
What's the definition of the word boon? Because I'd hate to have been using it wrong all these years. Quite the boon. I forget what I was initially saying. Is it radio? Is it not?
It is radio.
We don't have the Christmas holidays to sort of... I went to bed at 10 o'clock the other night.
Oh, yeah.
That's the earliest I've been to bed since I was 3.
How was it?
I remember in the olden days we were allowed to watch Quantum Leap and then straight to bed. You know, and even then it was just like, all right, you go to bed and then Sarah can watch Quantum Leap. And then I think I just wangled it so that I could actually just stay up an extra hour, even though that I was really meant to be in bed by 9.
But what year would Quantum Leap be? 1991-ish?
I reckon it was, late.
So you're about 9.
I was about 9 or 10. Late 80s, like very late 80s, but I would say it was probably 1991. Yeah. Good show.
It was a good show. I remember going away on holiday and that being the one show that I sort of demanded was taped for me when I was going on holiday that I'd be missed. So I had to set a timer for Quantum Leap. Hello, Natalie.
Natalie is ducking down, so why?
I don't know why she's ducking down, because they can't see
her. Boon, a thing that is helpful or beneficial, yeah? A favour or request. Can I have a boon off you?
A thing that is helpful or beneficial or a favour?
A favour or a request.
All right. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, what would you like?
I just wanted to use it in a sentence, really, but...
We used it in sentence before, but I can't remember what it was. What was the context of it?
I don't know. We're both a bit tired. We need to do something about this, Nat, because...
I've got a tea. I'm waking myself up.
Okay, right. Okay, cool. Because this is a very relaxed start. So,
it is.
Let's start as we need to go on.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Nat?
I'm doing great.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I was born ready. Good. Right. What have you been? When you're listening to Nick and Nat's fan club, rule number. We've done all that. Okay, but we're going to be a lot more energized.
Slick.
What's that, Nick? I just fell off my chair. I guess I was too slick. Yes. And right. Okay. So we've had a lot of reviews. I don't want to start with reviews, but I'm just going to let you know. We're still not up to 100. I don't think. We've got 94 ratings. We've got 92 five-star reviews and 2 4-star reviews. But I don't think that's true. I think we've got 99 reviews, and I think we've got 97 five-star reviews and 2 4-star reviews. Now, we've had a couple of fucking jokers that have written in saying 5-star start and 4-star finish.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that they say, for a long time now, I have been a fan of Nick and Nat's fan club. Hang on, we're not playing the fucking... Right. And I'm absolutely fucking livid with this one, right? Because it's the ultimate in he gives with one hand, he takes away with the other. I'm talking about God. It's the ultimate God, which I'm now going to use as a... It's not quite the boon I was expecting this morning. Right. For a long time now, I've been a fan of Nick and Nat's fan club. I guess we're going straight into the... Fuck it. So, well, it's only appropriate to start every issue of Fan Club with some fan mail.
Sure.
And as I've stressed in the past, as both Nathaniel and I have stressed in the past, sorry, I've been listening to a lot of Nigel Farage in Ubers recently. But as we've both stressed ourselves in the past, that... It is not our fan club.
No. It is it's about being a fan of something, but it's not a fan of Nick and Nat's. There has been a sort of side effect that some people have become fans.
Like Brundlefly.
Exactly.
An awful side effect of running our own genetic splicer of a show, which is Fan Club, has been that a fly has got in the ointment. And that ointment is a DNA accelerator, which is it's a transporter.
It is. Do you like the film The Fly?
I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
No, of course I've seen it. I've seen it loads. I love The Fly. I like The Fly. It's one of the most disgusting films I've
really
ever
is.
Seen. But it's really genuinely disgusting. All of the bits of the body stuff is disgusting. Him just being, was he eating a Twinkie or a donut, isn't it? And then he's sick on it.
Sick on it and eats it again.
And then he eats it
pulling
again.
His own fingernails off.
Oh, it's funny. He's got his penis is in his medicine cabinet. I think that's an Easter egg though.
I was going to say
that's in the old days of Easter eggs. There's not a big close up of it.
Was it a Kinder Surprise?
You see his dick in a jar, just sort of like in his medicine cabinet. Gina Davis was obviously a bit too rough with him. That's what. That's Fan Club.
And the bit I like in that is the bit where they've got a steak and he puts a steak through and he gets. Yeah, we've gone off topic.
Yeah, thank God, really. I just felt like I've got nothing to talk about this week and then so we've gone straight into the fucking 4-star, fucking 5-star, fucking. It's the steak.
There's a bit where he gets a steak and he puts a steak through the transporter machine. Because Gina Davis goes, "What do you think of that?"
He cooks both steaks. And she eats one of the steaks and she eats the other steaks.
Yeah.
And the first steak that she eats, I mean, it just makes you want to eat a steak.
Yeah, she goes, "Oh, yeah, it was really nice." Yeah, really. And then he goes, "The second steak that's been through the transporter machine." He goes, "What was that like?" She says, "Oh, it tastes like really synthetic." Mm. And he goes, "Right, right." And in that bit, he's very Jeff Goldblum-y and he starts typing something into a computer. And I always think what he's typing in can only be the word synthetic. And it's like, what's that making the machine do differently? So he's like going, "Yeah, and how else did it taste?" And he's typing something as if like, but you go, but you can't actually be doing anything with that. That information that Gina Davis has given you. It's almost, or he's gone, or he's typed in, "Make it less synthetic, enter."
But that's also, it's kind of like, why have you let her eat it?
Yes, it could be anything.
Because that could give her any sorts of things long term. Yeah. I mean, people are still, all up in the air about the long-term effects of microwaves. Sure. Microwaves.
And mobile phones.
Mobile phones.
So imagine eating a steak that had been cooked by a mobile phone.
Yeah, so let's just say you've been to the shops, they say, do you want any plastic bags? And you go, oh, I don't need any plastic bags, thanks, I bought my own. And then you realise that you haven't. Normally do, but you haven't bought your own plastic bags.
My worst one is when I've bought too much shopping and I've brought my own, and then I've sort of got to try and carry the rest of it in one hand. I've got one bag that I've brought and go, nah, I'm all right. And you start loading your shopping into your one bag. And then you realise you've still got all this other stuff that won't fit in
overflow,
the bag. But yeah. I don't ever go, actually, can I have a bag? Because it also feels like they think it's because you're trying to get off paying 5p. But it feels like you're going...
No, you're trying to save the planet.
Yeah, I'm sort of going... And then you're sort of trying to carry stuff in your sort of elbowed arm thank you, that's what I wanted.
I'm like that with baskets. I'm just like, I get to the shop and I'm just like, basket, and I need a basket.
I'm only getting
one thing, and then by the end of it, I'm juggling like a performer in a circus top. And so let's just say that your overflow is a steak.
Mm.
And you pop it in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just to save face, there's the woman or the man behind the counter, and they say, are you sure you don't want a bag for that, sir? You know, judging you. And you go, no, I'll be fine, thank you. It's only a steak. And so you pop the steak in your pocket,
mm-hmm.
and you walk home. It's a hot summer's day, granted.
Yeah.
And you get back and you undo all your packaging, all of your shopping, and you put it all away. And then you forget that you've had a steak in your pocket. Your phone goes, it's on vibrate, and you put your hand in your pocket to get your phone, and you pull it out, and the steak is sort of like on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's cooked.
It's cooked
all the way
steak.
Through.
Yeah.
Right?
Through radiation.
That's a combination of sun heat, legs wet, and phone radiation.
Yeah,
and you get but luckily Gina Davis is coming over for dinner, and she comes over. She goes, she's a bit early, and she goes, "Well, what am I going to feed her?" So you sit her down, and you go, "Try this steak."
And she's probably said, "Oh, am I too early?" And you've gone, "No, no, no, not at all. No, right on time. It's just, what have we got to eat?" And you look around the kitchen, all you've got is a sort of steak that's been cooked by the sun.
Legs wet.
Broiled legs sweat. And radiation from a vibrating mobile phone.
Gina doesn't care. She's just been to the gym and she is starving.
She loves a steak. We've seen it on the fly. She loves it.
She
loves a steak.
It's just meat.
She loves meat.
And so she gobbles it up.
Yeah.
And only then does she realise that it tastes very synthetic.
Synthetic.
She goes, how did you cook this? And you say, just on my phone.
Just on my phone.
It's just in my pocket.
And I said, how's it taste? And she says, like sort of synthetic. And then I start typing into my... She says, what are you typing? No, I just wrote synthetic in my laptop. And I've pressed enter. It's on a Word document.
Years later,
yeah,
the effects
of that
disease-riddled steak,
yeah,
directly lead to the production of Cutthroat Island, and that's probably how these things happen.
It is. I think that's how it came to be. I think I heard a podcast about it. Nick's just drank some tea. Sorry. He's trying not to spit out some herbal tea.
I like the fact that you could see that I was drinking tea, I was laughing, I was going to spit my tea everywhere, I didn't spit my tea everywhere, and then you just watched in silence for a good three seconds.
Because you're watching it, because deep down, that is what you want to happen, isn't it? You always want to see someone spit. A spit take is still one of the funniest things you can ever see, right?
Yeah.
I still think there's very few things funnier.
Sure. A really good one.
Oh, yeah.
Or sometimes a really bad one. Oh, God. Yeah, I have seen The Fly. Have you seen... why did we start talking about The Fly?
Because it was in, we're halfway through this review, aren't
we? Have you seen The Fly 2 with Eric Stoltz in it?
I think I have, but I can't remember a lot about it.
Yeah, it's I haven't seen it in a while. I do really like it, but if anything, is more disgusting than the original.
Oh, well, that's sort of good.
But he turns into sort of like a superhero.
Oh.
Where he's sort of like doing stuff, where he's the good guy.
Okay.
But I guess it was at the height of Eric Stoltz's career.
Such as it was.
So what, just after he got fired from Back to the Future and just before he applied a ton of latex on his face to star in the Oscar winning movie, yeah. Mask.
Mask, not to be confused with The Mask. The Jim Carrey.
Or the cartoon series Mask.
Mask Crusaders.
For a long time now, I've been a fan of Nick and Nat's Fan Club. So much so, I've even told my friends.
That's what you're supposed to do.
I really enjoy your two-hour pop culture laugh fest.
Oh, that's nice.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels like a strong start, but a rushed finish.
What?
Keep up the good work, though.
Well, I mean, we've literally done an extra hour to combat this.
I mean, what the fuck is that? I mean, it's still five stars. Don't tell you what, that is not a five-star review.
No.
That is an awful, horrible review, right? That is. I'm going to build you up and I'm just going to take it away at the last minute, right? And I would rather not have a review than have some filth like that blocking up my eyes and my ears and my mouth.
So now we've got five-star reviews that even don't even appear to be five-star reviews.
It read like a three.
It did. I was good at the start, but then sort of tailed off. That's like, that's like, that wouldn't be a five-star film, would it? If you're watching that. Oh, I really liked it. It's at the start, I was enjoying it. And then at the end, I sort of got a bit bored. Like Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master or something.
Or Omen 3.
Yeah, oh, is that?
I watched Omen 3 last night. Starts very strong. And then
Omen 3 the one with
Sam Neill?
Yeah.
I watched all the Omens. Omen 1.
Yeah, Damien Omen.
Awesome. The first Omen.
Oh, I love the Omen.
Richard Donner. What a cast. It's like fucking proper good, right? I don't know why I watched them. Why did I watch them? Because they were all, I think I downloaded them all for Halloween. And I hadn't seen all of them. And I was just like, I just remind myself what The Omen's like. So I watched The Omen. Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant film.
Absolutely brilliant. And I do believe I've seen a bit of The Omen 2 at one point. I remember him in a military academy trying to look for 666s in his airline.
Yes.
So I watched The Omen 2. Fucking hell, what a terrible, awful film. Just absolutely... Oh, it's boring. Rubbish.
I think I've only ever seen bits of The Omen 2.
But The Omen 2, what's interesting about that is that whenever there's a death coming up, they kind of signpost it, and then there's a whole sequence that's kind of like based around the fact that, oh, there's a guy getting on a lift, and hang on a minute, and then there's a big close-up of Damien's eyes, and he's going to do something. And it's kind of like, it's like basically a Final Destination sequence. And then when you think about Final Destination, you go, oh, actually, that's genius, because The Omen is about the son of... It's the Antichrist, about the Antichrist. So it's about the son of the devil, and he gets born, and there's all of this plot about these like seven daggers, and he can control Rottweilers, and he gets adopted by a family, and then it goes on, and you go, right, yeah. But with Final Destination, they've just gone, no. It's just going to be a series of kids getting killed.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it will go from bit to bit to bit. And who's doing it? Well, it's death. Death is like a thing.
We don't need to see
him. We don't see him, and it's just like, and then it will just be loads of sequences of kids getting, decapitated and stuff like that. And you go, brilliant, right? That's what all it is.
And because it does have that thing where everything gets to be accidental. So you get like, because there's an idea that death is responsible for it. Anything that in another film would be a bit coincidence, isn't it? That happened to be happening at exactly the same time. It almost just makes it like that is on purpose.
I think that does happen in some of the sequels.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. I haven't seen all the Final Destinations, but they're like the Saw films in a way, where I don't know which ones I've seen and which ones I haven't. Mm. I think I've seen the one with the roller coaster, and I think I've seen the one with the bridge, and I think I've definitely seen the first one with the plane. I saw that at the cinema. And that was the, because that had Sean William Scott in. So it felt like it was about the same time as like American Pie and all of that. So it felt like it was kind of like one of them teen comedies.
Yeah. So I guess that's before he sort of established himself as being like a sort of actor primarily for comedies when it he's just in anything.
But it was exactly that point. It was like, it was probably in between American Pie and Road Trip. And then, Final Destination, I don't know which ones I've seen. And the Saw films, I couldn't tell you which ones I've seen. But the Omen films, I can tell you exactly which ones I've seen.
You've seen one?
I've seen two. And I've seen three. I haven't seen four, which was a direct-to-TV remake.
When was four?
1991.
Oh, I don't know if I know four at all then. Yeah. Because by three, he's a grown-up, right? He's Sam Neill.
Four is a girl, but basically three doesn't go the way that you think. I mean, is this going
to be... Isn't it about bringing about the apocalypse? He is like trying to...
Three is just really confusing and convoluted. It's quite a straightforward plot where Sam Neill... the original writer basically said that he didn't want to do the sequel. So the original writer of The Omen was kind of like, I'm not going to do a sequel. Then they made a sequel, and then the writer said years later, if I was going to do a sequel, I would have ended it like... I would have started it like this. And then you go, yeah, that's much better. Because they kind of they don't reset it really, but the first one, Gregory Peck is the ambassador of the American ambassador in living in London, and it's kind of like one of those American Werewolf in London things where you get like a really good sort of depiction of what London was like at that time.
Yes, yeah,
you know, and it's really cool because you're looking at it, you're going, oh, that's the South Bank. But it doesn't look anything like that. Look at all the trees on the South Bank. And it hasn't been, you know, what you call it, industrialised, renovated. What Bob Hoskins and Barry Norman were walking along looking at. Look at that, it's a giant Mars bar.
Yeah. Look at that, it's got a Mars bar over there.
And he don't really know what he's referring to.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I think he just means like an office block, but they don't really look like Mars bars.
And also Mars bars are good.
Yeah, true.
I love them. And it's like he's like
look
going.
Mars bar.
There's a video online of Barry Norman, who's quite posh, who's basically getting down and dirty with
Bob Hoskins.
With acting player Bob Hoskins. And Bob.
It's basically about redevelopment. And he's done a film about. He did Long Good Friday, which is about redevelopment of the Docklands, really, not really the South Bank. So they then take Bob Hoskins to. That makes it sound like a much more boring film than it is.
it is quite boring.
Long Good Friday.
Oh, no, I meant the Barry Norman thing.
Oh, I find that. I love that. I could watch that all day.
Sure. That thing that you fucking posted the other day.
What was that?
It's fucking Jim Davidson.
Oh, yes.
That is incredible.
It is incredible.
Jim Davidson singing, "Hello, is it me you're looking for?" All like made up like Liberace, coming down a staircase, not for laughs. It doesn't
and he's doing
feel
it
like
to, and he's John Malkovich.
To John Malkovich, who's wearing eyeshadow and blusher, and it was just like, going, what?
I saw it and didn't think it was a real. I thought it was one of those things where someone's edited like three
spliced,
different films together,
together,
and it's made it look like he's singing by like putting like certain words he said over the top of.
No, it's his voice.
Yeah, but is him? Yeah,
he's singing because he can sing, can't he? He's an all-round entertainer.
Of course, he can.
He can sing. He can dance. And he can upset half a nation.
Davidson used to have a show on ITV. Like it was a stand-up show. Like a half-hour stand-up show every week. Much like Stuart Lee's. They're different. But like it was that format was just stand-up for half an hour every week.
It was like Billy... on the BBC, he did a Billy Connolly-style travel show where he travelled around the country and he did like a different gig every week.
It's a different time, wasn't it?
It wasn't even that late. It was way after Generation Game.
Oh,
it
wow.
was in the 2000s.
Wow.
It wasn't that long ago.
This was I reckon early to mid 90s. He had a stand-up show on ITV. And the last episode of that series ends with him singing quite earnest song. But like it is that thing where it's like I do also want to be a singer. Where he'd just do like an earnest song that you know to end the show.
Sure. But Lee Evans did that.
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah, yeah, and he's very much of the new school.
I think it all depends on who you are. And also, who doesn't want to be a singer?
It's true.
Yeah, and if you can sing, sing. Mm. It's like what Steve Martin says, just do everything in your arsenal and do everything in your arse.
Steve Martin there.
Steve Martin there. Direct quote, that is. Yeah. Don't take my word for it. Take the star of the Pink Panther 2. So
you sing.
Do I sing?
You sing on stage.
I do sing.
It's part of your arsehole.
That's why I found that's part of my arsehole. That's why I took particular offence. It's just like, leave Jim Davidson alone. Hey, he's allowed to sing. Okay. Right? He's allowed to sing.
Is that whatever he likes?
No, he's not.
he does it anyway.
But that clip that you showed was kind of like
it's worth looking up. It's I think it's from a film called Colour Me Kubrick, they said, but it was on
what? It's from a film.
It's from a film that's about Joe. There was that guy who used to pretend to be Stanley Kubrick. I think it's that story, but I don't know how they managed to turn it into a film that Jim Davidson's in.
Because Stanley Kubrick was kind of like. I'm losing my words today.
Well, I was going to say.
I was going to say he was a bit of a hermit, but I didn't want to say hermit. A recluse.
And
that's what it was.
And like before now, if you said Stanley Kubrick, everyone would be like, or if you're a sort of a film fan, you'd go, yeah, I can picture Stanley Kubrick in my head right now.
Salman Rushdie.
Yeah, exactly what he looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the image in your head.
Salman Rushdie,
yeah. But like at that time, in the sort of 90s, and I guess it would have been, he wouldn't have made a film for. You know, in between Full Metal Jacket and Eyes Wide Shut, he didn't make a film in 12 years. And I think there was a period then where people really didn't know what Stanley Kubrick looked like. And he was quite reclusive, and you'd have, like, no idea what he looked like. And there was a guy who used to go around London pretending to be Stanley Kubrick. And also with an English accent, because that was the other thing, that it was almost like people had forgotten he wasn't English. They made a TV documentary about him, I reckon. Good sort of 20 years ago, and it was a thing where they were following him around, and he would turn up at places like the Groucho Club and go, hi, I'm not a member, but some of my friends are. And they go, oh, yeah. And he said, and he'd go, oh, my name's Mr. Kubrick. And they go, oh, is it Stanley? And he'd be like, that's correct. And they go, well, of course you can come in. And he was just a guy who lived his life impersonating Stanley Kubrick.
Where did you say he went?
Groucho Club and places.
What, to hang out with?
Yeah, to hang out with whoever was there that day. So this is from the film Colour Me Kubrick with John Malkovich and Jim Davidson.
Is Jim Davidson in it quite a lot then?
I don't know, I've not seen it.
I mean, there's a photo of them in the film.
My mate sent me the clip.
Oh, and my God, this film looks fascinating.
Yeah. And I was like, what is this? And then afterwards I was like, what is this from? And I remember that film coming out, but I never ever saw it.
When did it come out?
I think like a few years ago, not long ago, like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, they both look 2005. 2005.
Okay, wow.
What, 14 years ago?
14 years ago.
I was going to say, they both look quite, you know, like later on in their lives. Mm. But now imagine.
Just add 14 years onto that.
Colour Me Kubrick.
Peter Bowles is also in it. Thank you.
Who's Peter Bowles?
He's the guy from... what's it called? To the Manor Born Moustache.
Oh, yeah, right, okay, sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
there
I know.
There we go. He's a cad and a bounder. He's your number one British cad.
Sure, okay.
Colour Me Kubrick. How have we got onto this? We keep going off on tangents, don't we? Like we do every week.
we were talking about... oh, God, what were we talking about? Was it... What?
Reviews?
Oh, no, we weren't. We were talking about Bob Hoskins and Barry That's Norman right. walking along the South Bank. And it's kind of like there's this class divide between Barry Norman, who's kind of Barry Norman and Bob Hoskins. And Barry Norman wants to be liked by Bob Hoskins so much.
Yeah. And I think Bob Hoskins is, well, I guess that's the sort of the new. Bob Hoskins almost represents like a new turning point for actors where they're not anymore being, they don't have to be sort of rather trained doing RP. He's a sort of new generation of like working class people who will keep their own accents. They're not going to pretend to be posh to do Shakespeare. They're going to be. And I think there's probably, and I guess
he
at that
will
time,
pretend to be posh to be a butler in Made in Manhattan, though, won't he? Yeah. I like Bob Hoskins.
Oh, I think he's great.
I when I referred to him as a pleb earlier, I was referring to him as the way that it comes across.
Just, my thing, my favourite Bob
Hoskins. It's sort of like a... And now I'm joined on the South Bank by working class actor Bob Hoskins.
Not Robert Hoskins. Bob. his name? It's Bob.
He seems to have an addiction to chocolate as well. So let's hope he keeps that under wraps. Look at Mars Bar.
Looks like a Mars Bar.
It's like a Looney Tunes cartoon where he just sees buildings and then they sort of mirage into a Mars Bar. He loves Mars Bars so much. Bob Hoskins was meant to be in The Untouchables. You know this story, don't you?
Hang on a minute. Jim Davidson met Alan Conway, who pretended to be Stanley Kubrick. He even bought him dinner at a hotel in Devon and was impressed that it took lots of takes to get the opening scene of Full Metal Jacket right.
Oh, wow. So he met him as Stanley Kubrick, as if... So
this is Jim Davidson's story.
In real life. And they went, well, I'll do the film about him because I've met him.
He doesn't talk like that.
Jim Davidson.
Oh, is that what he looked like? I suppose, yeah, that's right, not bad. I mean, you can't hear it, but it's basically... we've got a picture of the real guy that pretended to be the real Stanley Kubrick, and for all intents and purposes, it looks a little bit like John Malkovich next to Salman Rushdie, if you can imagine such a thing. So, can we get a picture of Salman Rushdie up? Next to Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. I can see it. There's definitely a resemblance.
What do you mean there's a resemblance? I don't...
You think they're the same person?
Yeah.
You think Salman Rushdie should pretend to be Stanley Kubrick to get into the Groucho Club?
If he wants to get in the Groucho Club.
He should pretend to be Stanley Kubrick.
Well, he had like a death threat on him, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. A fatwa on him.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
You go,
Oh, no, very much so, actually.
No, very much so. No. I'm the director of Full Metal Jacket. I didn't...
Do you mean if someone went to kill Salman Rushdie,
yeah,
he'd pretend to be Stanley Kubrick and vice versa?
Yeah.
He'd go, no, mate, that's Salman Rushdie over there. that'd be a good film. Get John Malkovich in that.
Well, apparently that's what The Shining's about.
Is it one of the many readings of it?
Yeah. Anyway. It's half past. I'm going to play a song. And then we've got loads to do today. Thanks for listening.
Much too late, my time is past.
So Tom Jones was on first, and then Ollie Murs was on after.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
It's much too late on FUBAR Radio.
The V Festival. Was it V Festival?
That's bonkers, isn't it? I suppose.
I was like, this is the closest thing we've got to a living Elvis. It's Tom Jones. It was Tom Jones and competition runner-up.
Ollie Murs is obviously a much bigger star than I think he is.
Yeah.
I saw an Ollie Murs video, and in the video, like, pranking about was Rowan Atkinson and Snoop Dogg. And you go, what, an Ollie Murs video? And you think both those people are much more famous than Ollie Murs, right?
No.
That they could be in...
Oh, no.
What?
No. Ollie Murs is more famous than Snoop Dogg.
Is he?
Yeah. And Rowan Atkinson.
What a world. What a world.
Ollie Murs, they were just, I can't remember what part of the country Ollie Murs is from, but they're basically going to put him on the £20 note.
Good. I'm glad.
I don't know anything about Ollie Murs.
No,
I just
I know
that he came second in a competition and then he was headlining this festival, and you go, okay, he's on, Tom Jones was on just before him.
I just thought he was like, you know, X Factor runner-up or something.
Tom Jones was good.
What did he do? Did he do your favourite one about the puppets?
He didn't do Young New Mexican Puppeteer, which I just... Well, then he got some string and he got some wood.
If we can get that, have we got the...
Can we get the Young New Mexican Puppeteer?
That's a good song.
By Tom Jones, it's a really good song.
Really good song.
Well, then he got some string and he got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. Game running so they could hear the Young New Mexican Puppeteer.
Actually a really good version.
He did.
I think that's better than his.
He did Kiss, but he changed. He's obviously very religious now, and so he goes, "Kiss, I think I better dance now." And he didn't do that. He went, "Kiss, I think I better pray now."
No.
Yeah, it was.
Kiss was like his 80s comeback, wasn't it? It was like his sort of for a new generation.
Yeah,
Tom
but
Jones.
I've got this. I've got this CD box set, which has got so many discs of him doing like a Las Vegas concert. Tina Turner turns up. Must have been like all of his Vegas years, basically.
Mm.
And it's and all of like the music is very kind of like done on keyboards and
right,
stuff.
Right, yeah. No production on it.
Or it's just, it sounds very cheesy. And also it's kind of like classic. Obviously Tom Jones now is an elder statesman of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, I mean, you don't, a lot of you kids that are listening to our show, and we know that our demographic is mainly
16 to 18 year olds.
But you'll only know Tom Jones as the white-haired wizard from Wales.
But
not that long ago, he would dye his hair black, and he would dye his beard black, and it was very obviously. It was kind of like a really.
It was almost like a sort of boot polish kind of thing, wouldn't it? It'd be unnaturally black.
His beard particularly was very kind of like almost offensive.
Mm.
And then it looked
like it had been sharpied on.
It was crazy. So that was like the mid stage Tom Jones, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really kind of.
There we go.
Oh my God. The Tom Jones I grew up knowing was he basically had a David Hasselhoff afro.
Yes.
And a white shirt, unbuttoned to the navel.
Yes, yes.
And gold medallions.
Yes, certainly.
And he was kind of like, it was like...
And he was not young then.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
There we go.
Fucking hell.
Natalie's been posting sexy pictures of Tom Jones in sexy, like, trunks he's wearing, swimming trunks. With, again, he's got swimming trunks on, but he's also got a very large crucifix.
Very large crucifix.
Which would probably be tough when you're going for a swim. I wouldn't recommend it. I'd keep that in his locker. Put it in the locker first.
My friend told me a story, but it's probably not true, but what are the rules about telling a story? Can you let us just tell a story? That my friend said that he was a session musician with Tom Jones, and he told this story, but it's probably...
Libelous.
Yeah.
No, maybe
I won't do it.
Oh.
Okay, but it's a funny story. But he also gigged with another musician called John Tomes. And and he was also from Wales. Can I tell that story?
John Tomes?
No, I can't. Right, okay, right.
Oh.
He's a little bit like a skinny Lou Ferrigno.
Yes, he does look a bit like... He's in good shape in that era.
Yeah, and he does like to get in his pants a lot.
He does. They're very small.
Tiny pants.
Very small pants.
Thanks for noticing, boys.
There he is, popped in. Thanks. How are you doing, Tom?
Not so bad. Oggy, oggy, oggy.
Oi, oi, oi.
There we go. it was oh fuck. So that's what Tom Jones was, and then like overnight he just was sort of like, do you know what, I'm gonna go grey.
Yeah, he just went.
And
it was almost,
oh my God, you look so much better. You just look incredible now.
Yeah, he just sort of went, because it's more truthful, isn't it? It's like people wearing wigs or something, isn't it? You go, what you got a wig on for? Everyone knows it's a wig.
Well, there's photos of John Travolta on the internet without his hairpiece. And he's just got like a receding hairline. He just looks like a normal guy of his age that's kind of like got a slight, it is a receding hairline. And he wants to be young forever. But you go, you're not going to be young forever by stapling a squirrel onto your head, are you?
did you see that video of him that he did recently, again with Olivia Newton-John?
Oh my God, that Christmas video.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, it is just, it's absolutely just jaw-dropping, because you just think, you must have had a higher production value than that.
Yes.
It's John Travolta, for a start. Why wouldn't you, basically John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John did a Christmas album together, and they did a video that came out, and the video was just sort of like, it was like... It was John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John they're on a plane, or they're meeting at an airport, or they're driving along a country road together, and then John Travolta is kind of like meeting up with his family, although John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John are rekindling like an old romance from Greece.
Yes.
But then John Travolta's meeting Kelly Preston at the airport, and then they all meet and they all like hug and they're back for Christmas. And then John Travolta gets in the sort of magic car from Greece with Olivia Newton-John and just drives off with her, and Kelly Preston's at the airport. This is how I remember it. Kelly Preston's at the airport like waving off her husband as they fly up into the sky. But the production values are so low. It's absolutely...
It's absolutely bonkers.
Absolutely. I was going to say bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. You just go, what was anyone... It's as bonkers as the Jim Davidson thing.
Bonkers. Bonkers is a good radio word, isn't it? It's a good... it's very Radio 1, Radio 2. Absolutely bonkers. So I think we're on track for being good. Yeah. Radio presenters and DJs.
Sure. Just going to read this out. I told some friends, F. Murray Abraham, brilliant.
Oh, good name.
Obviously, F. Murray Abraham was the Oscar-winning actor who appeared in Last Action
Amadeus.
Hero. Just discovered your show.
I felt compelled to write a review. Love the chemistry and film knowledge. My favourite parts of the show are when you go full nerd about a subject. I'm a fellow nerd, and when Nick screams at the producer, that amuses me. Love the guest list, but to be honest, would prefer a few less comedians and a few more film people. Sorry.
can you scream at the producer about this, please? Get James McAvoy on. I'd enjoy that. Cheers, chaps. Keep up the five-star show.
Keep up the five-star show and never let it end. Never let it end.
You get James McAvoy on?
Love the guest list, but to be honest, would prefer a few less comedians and a few more film people. Can you scream a producer about this, please? Get James McAvoy on. I'd enjoy that.
Does F. Murray Abraham realise that we're comedians? It suggests that he's like, there's always loads of comedians on. Why is that?
We'd love to get more film people on.
James McAvoy, get him on.
We'd love to. Absolutely love to.
Tom Jones, can you get him on? He's on now.
What's this one? I am a fan of Hammer.
Carpenter.
I don't listen to this on iTunes, but felt strangely compelled to give it the five-ish stars it so obviously deserves. I'm a fan of Hammer. I'm a fan of Screwdriver. I'm a fan of the whole toolbox. That's what I'd have said.
Not the racist band Screwdriver, though.
No. Nicer than the rest. If Levi Roots made this podcast, he might say, put some music in your ears. But that doesn't work. That would just mean literally listening to music.
Yeah.
So in retrospect, he wouldn't say that. I love this beautiful shambles and it genuinely gives me more laughs than any other show.
I mean, for the love of God.
For the love of God, please keep up the good word. Keep up the good word, lads. My name's Tom Jones, and I have had one or two. What's going on?
Nothing.
Is he on the phone?
I don't know. No, I was just thinking. No. Okay, good.
Is our guest on the phone?
No. Okay, good.
Five stars on me, boys.
Five stars on me, boys.
33 minutes in an episode one to 1 hour 47 in the current one. I think forgotten from when I pressed play. So many facts. I'm going to have to Google it. I mean, you haven't put the whole review on that one, Nat. I'm sorry, you've really...
How's that work? Can you not go down?
No. Back up for when you have no Buxton herrings left. I don't know.
Solid effort.
Back up when you've got no Buxton herrings left.
What, so you're saying you only listen to this show when you've run out of Adam Buxton and Richard Herring?
What I'd like to say is that Richard Herring and Adam Buxton have gone out of their way to actually produce a podcast, whereas Nathaniel and Nick, as much as I love them boys, I mean, they don't have a podcast in them. They've got 2 hours of live radio a week, and God, I remember listening to it all the way down in Cardiff Bay, thinking, I've got to get into that studio. And
what are you a fan of, Tom?
Tom?
Yeah.
What have I...
special guest, Tom Jones.
What am I a fan of?
Yeah, what are you a fan of this week? Improvise.
Anal. thanks, Tom. That was great.
Thanks for coming in.
Tom's been in. I've got to go, lads. Bye.
Okay, see you later, Tom. Have a good one. That was nice.
Tom Jones came on right in there. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So what are you saying? We've got our guest on the...
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's ready. Okay, right, good. Brilliant. Well, then, without further ado, how do we do this? We got to just put the fader up. And okay, right, so we're going to now talk to Ryan Hutton. Ryan Hutton, are you there?
Hello, yeah, I'm here.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you boys? You all right?
Not bad.
So, Ryan Hutton, you're an actor, and you are currently in... has it started yet? You're rehearsing, aren't you?
No, still rehearsing. So, we open in about 2 weeks' time. So, yeah, we open on the 9th of Feb. So, still rehearsing now, yeah.
And you're doing the Only Fools and Horses musical...
We are.
With Paul Whitehouse and Tom Bennett.
Yes, that's it. The legend himself, Mr. Paul Whitehouse and Tom. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Wow. Yeah, and it's and you're playing Rodney Trotter, right?
I am indeed. Yeah, I'm Dave.
How does that work? Because it's like, does it feel like that's a part you can kind of really get your teeth into, or does it feel like such a recognisable thing that Nicholas Lyndhurst did? That you are then doing Nicholas Lyndhurst doing Rodney. Are you able to approach it in that way?
Yeah, good question. When I found out that I got it, there was obviously this daunting cloud over the top of me going, how the hell am I even going to try and attempt this? Because what Sir David Jason did and Nick Lyndhurst did and all the rest of them is timeless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It really was that's why people still love it now, because of what they did. But I sort of feel like we made a conscious effort of sort of lending it myself to Rodney, but also not trying to do a carbon copy of it, because even for my own mental state and people watching it, they don't want to watch me do an impersonation for 2 hours, because it's about sort of giving elements and doing what I think would be best. But the joy of it is really is because John Sullivan, everything's on the page, you know, because his writing's so good, he sort of... I can sort of lend ourselves to that. But I mean, I'm tall and I'm lanky, which helps, you know. that's sort of a bonus. That sort of allowed me to sort of a way in, I suppose.
Yeah.
But try and sort of keep it as close to me as I can.
And imagine all three of you have gone through that, because they're such recognisable characters. So you kind of like, it wasn't like you were going through it by yourself, you know?
Sorry, what was that, mate? Sorry, I just lost you there a bit.
Well, I just imagine it all three, like Paul and Tom Bennett and you, because you're all playing... Well, Tom Bennett's playing Del Boy, you're playing Rodney, and Paul Whitehouse is playing Grandad. So they're all established characters. So I imagine when you were all approaching it, you were all kind of like talking about, you know, how much of it is an impersonation and how much of it you bring into yourself.
Well, exactly. There was always... It was great because me, Paul and Tom had a week and a half... Before the whole company came together, we had a week and a half with our director, CJ Ranger. We sort of sat down and we worked on those Nelson Mandela house scenes with us. And it was just a family. So we tried to sort of build the connection between us before we went into the room. So when we did come to the scenes, it was coming from a place of honesty and truth. Because, I mean, London in that time when Only Fools and Horses was set, it was tough, you know what I mean? Like, they were all sort of... No wonder they were sort of wheeling and dealing, because it was struggling to make ends meet. And that's when we're all coming from it. Tom and, I mean, Grandad, obviously Paul's an amazing personator, so he sort of lended himself to it a bit more as Grandad. But I feel like for me and Tom especially, it was sort of trying to keep it as... honest to us as we can, but also giving the audience what they want, because people pay money, we can't go on there and come on and do something completely different. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Come on there, do Rodney's a Scouser. I know, he's like, come on there and keep it as giving the audience what they want, but also remaining true to what we think is correct. You know?
And it's already a musical.
Yeah.
Which Only Fools and Horses wasn't. How do the songs work?
So, the songs, I thought, because obviously the late, great John Sullivan, before he died, he'd actually started working on the musical. So, he'd already started writing a couple of songs. So, it was his sort of dream, and now his son sort of takes it on with Paul. And it's a weird one, you know, like, it's a musical, but I feel like it's more of a play with songs, you know. It's not your typical sort of run-of-the-mill musical. The songs, which obviously Chaz Hodges wrote with Paul, they're very sort of Chaz and Dave of style. It's like if he's going to be down the Nag's Head on a Friday night, someone ends up at the piano and starts singing, and it's just a bit of a knees up. And then there's other contrasting beautiful songs which Raquel or Cassandra will sing, but it always comes out of a place of where you can see it coming out of, you know. It's sort of it sort of happens organically, which I think people are going to be surprised, you know. I feel like you're going to come and watch it and enjoy it for one, hopefully, but also like the originality of it all.
We were saying before, I think on the press release, it said there was like 20 new songs. Is that right?
Yeah.
20?
Yeah. So there's about 20 new numbers. Some of them are short, some of them are longer. But
okay.
Yeah, so there's, there is a couple in there. There's a couple of Chaz and Dave songs in there, little snippets of that. We've got the opening theme tune, obviously, but a lot of them sort of, just sort of lend themselves to the characters. And so Dale's got a couple of songs by himself, but most of them are original, and they're great fun. I mean, just the band sound wicked, and it's a proper, you just want to have a pint in your hand, to be honest, and you want to be up dancing for most of it.
Have you had any contact with the original cast at all?
No, we haven't. And not that, well, I'm speaking for myself here, and I know Tom hasn't. I think there is talk that they will possibly be coming to press night. Some of them, I'm unsure as to who, but I mean, I would love to meet them, you know. Like, I'm a massive fan of the show anyway, so even if I could meet them, it would be cracking. But I'm unsure whether or when they're coming.
And you're quite young, aren't you? So you would have been very young. Was it something you still grew up with then?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm 24 now, so when I... It's weird. It was always something that seemed to just be on. I don't know what it's like in other people's houses, but I feel like there's not one person, especially in England, who hasn't heard of it.
Is
a fan. So it always seemed to be on in the house, whether it was mum and dad had it on at Christmas time or... Because it's always on... Because it's on Dave now, isn't it? I don't know what it used to be on, but...
It's on Netflix as well.
Oh, yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, so it was always on. I mean, I know that my mum and dad, when they first started dating, they used to watch it on a Sunday. It's like a date night. So it's sort of instilled in me watching it. I wouldn't say I'm a super fan, but I definitely enjoyed watching it growing up.
Yeah, and did you ever get to meet Chas Hodges?
No, I didn't, unfortunately, no. Because, I mean, it all sort of happened at the same time, which is... When I think Paul started writing it with him and stuff, it's sad, isn't it? But I never got to meet him. But again, Chas and Dave, it's nice that we're going to be carrying on their legacy in some way as well. You know, like that feels nice that we can sort of fly the flag for Chas as well.
Absolutely, and Jim Sullivan's getting to finish off what his dad started, and
which is the main thing. I feel like that's the nice thing to remember that it's. Because I feel like without that, I don't feel it would be happening, you know, unless John Sullivan wanted it to happen. It would have been a weird thing to sort of try and tackle, because why else would you want to try and even reimagine something which is already so amazing? So, yeah, if we can carry it on, then hopefully it would be brilliant.
When you pitch the Only Fools and Horses stage show musical, I mean, that does sound odd. Until you say that all of the original people started it off and you're basically finishing it off. And I think that makes it make sense. That gives it a purpose. I think that's really good. I think it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It is. And do you know what? It's all the little snippets of... So the play in itself is about 2 hours long. And if you think of the sort of iconic moments, they've done an amazing job, Paul and... Jim, of sort of merging all these different theories and worlds together into a storyline which covers a lot of those things which people want to see. Because if you come in to watch a theatre and you come in to watch Only Fools and Horses, there's certain stuff in there which you would hope is in there, you know, because that's what made you love it so much. Right, it covers a lot. It covers a lot in the musical.
Do you go to Miami?
We don't. I wish we did.
It would be a bit rude to the audience, I suppose, if halfway through you just all fucked off to Miami.
I can say we are firmly stuck in Peckham.
And where's it on at? It's going to be on at which theatre?
So it's going to be on the Theatre Royal Haymarket. And so, lovely theatre. It's nice and, it fits in there nicely. We're just moving all the sets going in there this week. Opens on the 9th of Feb, and then we crack on and hopefully people enjoy it.
Well, good luck with it. Have a thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime. Thank you very much for having me.
Also, it must be amazing working with Paul Whitehouse.
Of course. How's that?
I would say it's like it is a real masterclass, because like Only Fools, I feel like Paul is like a national treasure as well. Everyone just loves the guy. And it was that thing when you meet people who you admire and you think, oh, God, I hope they're fucking nice. And he really is, like, just the most generous man I think I've possibly ever met. I mean, in terms of in the room as well, he's constantly giving ideas, constantly offering. He's the most enthusiastic. Obviously, it's difficult to act opposite him sometimes because he just makes you laugh. He's just making you corpse, whether he's putting a funny face or not. But he's a lovely, lovely man.
He can sing as well, can't he? He can sing.
And also, he plays a lot of instruments, you wouldn't know. I don't know. But he's a great musician, which I wasn't aware of until I met this. But he's always... He can play guitar well and piano. And he's written quite a lot of the songs which are in this, which... Just another string to his bow, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. And tickets are now on sale from onlyfoolsmusical.com.
That's the one.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us. Guys.
Yeah, good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Break a leg with it. Break a leg.
See ya.
Right, see ya.
Cheers, bye.
Oh, what a nice man.
A lovely man.
Right, can I play a song now? What do you want? Your one or Young New Mexican Puppeteer?
Young New Mexican Puppeteer, please.
Okay.
In a town near Albuquerque lived the most concerned young boy. He said, lately I have noticed folks don't live with peace and joy, with frowns and worries in their faces. They lost and don't know where to go. He said, I'll get the people straightened by putting on a puppet show. The Young New Mexican Puppeteer, he saw the people all lived in fear. He thought that maybe they'd listen to a puppet telling them what to do. Well, now he got some string and he got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. And folks came running so they could hear the Young New Mexican Puppeteer. First he carved out young Abe Lincoln. Abe will teach them civil rights. Then a king named Martin Luther, so they'd recall his peaceful fight. Old Mark Twain, his wit and wisdom, will surely show them life is fun. But he smiled with satisfaction when the Prince of Peace was done. The Young New Mexican Puppeteer, he saw the people all lived in fear. He thought that maybe they'd listen to a puppet telling them what to do. And now he got some string and he got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. And folks came running so they could hear the Young New Mexican Puppeteer. Now his puppet shows were clever, and he made the people laugh. When he got across the message to walk along love's open path, they built him his own puppet theater, decked out with spotlights yellow and red. And then they rolled him up in all the papers, and this is what the story said. It said the Young New Mexican Puppeteer, he saw the people all lived in fear. He thought that maybe they would listen to a puppet telling them what to do. And now he got some string and he got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. And folks came running so they could hear the Young New Mexican Puppeteer. The Young New Mexican Puppeteer. He saw the people all lived in fear. He thought that maybe they would listen to a puppet telling them what to do. And now he got something and he got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. And folks came running so they could hear the Young New Mexican Puppeteer. Oh!
Well, then I got
some string and I got some wood. He did some carving and he was good. And people came running so they could hear the young New Mexican puppeteer.
Thanks for popping back
on FUBAR Radio.
And he's off.
He's gone again.
He's gone again. He's mashed the buttons and ran away. We're joined in the studio now by Evelyn Mock.
Whoop, whoop.
How's it? What was Hello. It like meeting Tom Jones then, briefly?
Oh, it was really exciting.
He walked in, didn't he?
Walked in, sang a bit of the song we just played.
I touched his hair on his chest.
What did it feel like?
Like a carpet. Welsh carpet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
I'm thinking that the guy who wrote you guys about having more actors on is disappointed now because yet another comedian.
We don't have why Dad's disappointed by this show because we had an actress, Claudie Blakely. He thought fourth guest. Thought she was a very good guest. And
No one's been good since.
Oh dear.
So you do have a lot to live up to. Don't worry. You get to a point in my dad's eyes where you'll never please him, so you stop trying.
What's my dad's surname? His surname as well.
That's a roundabout way of asking who I am.
I don't know why I'm here.
My dad's name is Tony.
Hello, Tony.
Tony Helm. Tony Magic Helm. That's his middle name, Magic. What are you up to anything at the moment?
Are you here
to promote anything? Should we get out of the way?
Oh my gosh, what should I promote? I'll be doing a show at the Pleasance.
When?
The 7th of February.
Is it your show?
It's my show, and together with another guy, we're just doing a work in progress. So really, don't come to that.
Don't promote that. I thought it's your finished show.
No, not at all.
I don't like it when people come to work in progress.
Oh, yeah?
At all. But you need them to come as well, don't you?
Nah. Because the people that come to work in progress, I think a lot of the time, think that they're going to go and see the finished show for cheap.
Yeah, right. That's true.
And you
go,
it's not that. My work in progress is literally a work in progress. It's like I've got all of the parts for a car off eBay from separate sellers, and I'm putting it together in the kitchen, and someone's turned up and said, "Where's my car?" And I go, "It's not ready." I don't think I've even got all the parts.
It's always, do you feel like they judge you extra harsh with their eyes? I can't look people in the eyes after I've done a work in progress.
No.
I feel like you've almost, that's what you've signed up for. I think you've got there's no...
Maybe we're being too harsh on the audience, me and Nick.
Mm.
No.
Well, I don't know. I always think like that's all you can, you know, that's what it is. This is it.
I did a gig last night where the audience member, where the main audience member sat on the front row. It was a small gig, sat on the front row with her back to the stage, eating cake.
Did anyone pull her up on it?
Not really until it was, Grania did, Grania Maguire. It was just bizarre because you go, you know that there's actual human beings standing on stage for your benefit. You've come out, you've chosen, you weren't eating cake and then a comedy club erupted. You went to a comedy club, bought some cake and then sat with your back to the audience and ate to the stage and ate it. Yeah, I think.
It sounds like she had a great night though. I'm going to be honest.
The thing is, I think the highlight of a night was the cake. Yeah. It's a sad thing.
That was really nice.
But I suppose for everyone, like if that was the choice, you'd go, actually, do you want to watch this or do you just want to eat some cake?
I just want to eat some cake.
I'll have some cake. That's nice. I had a nice time. The cake wasn't work in progress. It wasn't just like bits of like doughy mix. Mm. It was probably a finished cake.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess
it wasn't work in progress last night.
Oh, it was a proper chaos. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to give you that impression. It wasn't work in progress. It was a special gig that we'd all written special material for.
Oh.
And she didn't pay attention.
So what was the special subject?
I don't want to go into it much more because people will be able to piece together what the gig was. But it was a bizarre audience. And I found... But I haven't gigged in a year. It was my first one back. And I was just like, oh... Oh, I remember. It takes an hour to get there, an hour to get home, and
you wouldn't recommend it.
I just think that I've got a long year ahead of me of gigging. Mm. I just really, anyway, how do you find gigging?
Traumatizing.
It is, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you like getting on stage? Are you a natural performer?
No, not at all. No.
How did you start? What was your kind of origin comedy?
Where were you from?
I'm from Sweden, I'm from Sweden, but I look like I'm not from Sweden, and I sound like I'm not from Sweden. But my origin story starts there.
I think you've got a bit of Swedish accent. I can pick up on something,
That's the worst thing you could have said to me.
Okay. All right. I think there's something, though.
You've got an international accent.
Yeah, it's international.
I have an international school accent, yeah. I watch TV.
Is that what it is? Mm. International school? I don't know what international school is.
It's just, it's a bunch of kids who, their parents never want to settle down, but they had kids. And so they just move to different countries with their kids in tow. And the kids just change schools and end up sounding very American, but non-regionally specific.
That makes it seem like, I guess, a regular English voice is American. The accent is American.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of like the cool accent.
Hang on. What?
The cool accent.
Speaking English in an international sense means that your accent is American.
Yeah.
Closer to a British accent.
Well, how'd you figure that?
Well, that's what I mean. If that's the sort of result of it, if people go to international schools speaking English at international schools, but they come out with a slightly more American version of English.
Look, this show is about just being a fan of stuff. It's not about forcing your agenda on people, Nat. Well, we all know you voted Leave.
Oh, dear.
Sorry about that. Right, so international accent, yeah. And okay. So you grew up in Sweden, did you?
I grew up in Sweden, yeah.
And did you perform comedy in Sweden?
I did, yeah. I started after university, which was, I just did a 2-year program because I just wanted to.
A 2-year comedy program or a 2-year university program?
I did. So the thing is, I wanted to do acting at uni,
yeah.
But I missed all of the deadlines and I didn't really dare to audition for acting school. So I thought, what's the best?
Why? Because auditions are awful.
Yeah, because I'm not a natural performer, as I said, but I want the attention. I just want all of the attention all the time.
That's a dangerous mix.
Yeah, it's very pleasing now here. That I'm on a radio show and you're looking at me.
Oh, good.
It's very nice. Good. It's probably, maybe I should get into radio.
Yeah, yeah.
And get the attention.
But usually if you do a radio show by yourself, no one's looking.
That's true.
So you'd have to join.
And usually if you do a radio show with Nathaniel,
one's
listening.
I'm like, what I do is I take Nick Helm's audience and I minus them.
Yeah.
I filter them out.
I didn't mean that. You could have said the same thing with me. I just meant that when you do a radio show by yourself, no one's watching. When you do a radio show with someone else, no one's listening.
Yeah.
Well, there's
always one person listening, isn't there, Nat?
Yeah, it's always me.
You.
Yeah. Aww. Now we're two. I'm listening too.
That's right.
Only because it's real time.
And me, I listen.
And I'm here.
Don't you put your hand up, Natalie.
Listening.
Like all of a sudden you've been fucking listening.
Not always. Sometimes you say things, it never comes up.
Unbelievable.
Is that Natalie?
That's Natalie.
Oh, hi, Natalie.
You should have met her, actually. She should have answered the door and brought you in. That's not true. That's not her job. I just wanted to say, because we didn't say it before, we still have not talked about The Predator. Have you seen The Predator?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it.
Have you seen Predator?
I've seen Predator.
Have you seen Predator 2?
No.
Have you seen Predators?
No. Oh, my God, so many.
Have you seen Aliens versus Predator?
Isn't that the classic one? No.
And have you seen Alien vs. Predator Requiem?
No.
And have you seen the episode of Jim Will Fix It with Gary Glitter on it?
I have. That
one. You've seen all of the Predators.
Predators, that is. That's the...
there's a new Predator in town, and it's the Predator. I'm not going to talk about the Predator this week. That's for the first hour. I did want to just say that I saw a film on Sunday at the BFI called Gaslight.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the 1940 film called Gaslight. And it's absolutely incredible. Like, it was amazing. What I love so much about it was a lot of the camera work felt really modern. Mm-hmm. There's kind of like, it was 1940, but there's like, they talk about like a headline in a newspaper, and then all of a sudden the camera sort of like speeds up to it, like the newspaper's miles away, and then the camera sort of like ramps up really quickly, so it's just a headline on the screen. So it's almost like a
smash cut kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of, but it's almost like a Sam Raimi type cut. It was all built on sets, and you can tell that it's sets, and they haven't kind of like disguised the fact that people are clomping around on wooden floors. Oh. Even though it's like exterior shots that are in London, and there's kind of like big kind of like stone buildings and stuff, but they're clomping around on these wooden floors, and it's kind of like, it's quaint like that. But the camera work is so ahead of its time. It's kind of like really fluid and kind of like moves around a lot. And there's this amazing shot right at the beginning where they're talking about where it's kind of like it starts 20 years ago, and in order to show that, it shows the house that it's all set in. It's a film called Gaslight, which is basically, it's about a husband who convinces his wife that she's going crazy in order to lock her away so that he can kind of get all of
her money.
And that's where the phrase gaslighting comes from, right, where you're telling someone that they're crazy to the point where they start...
I think I know the actress in that. She's blonde...
No, so there was a remake, so you might know that actress, but then 4 years later there was a remake with Ingrid Bergman in it, and that's the famous one that won all the Oscars.
Oh, I see.
And so they made this little British film in 1940, and you might know because she was blonde in that. I can't remember any of the details about it, but she was. They made the original in 1940, and then because it was a play called Angel Street, they bought the rights. They made a film out of it. It was called Gaslight because there's loads of. She knows when he's in the next room because the gas, the lights in the house dim, because because when you switch on another gas light, it takes away some of the gas flow in the old gas lights, and then 4 years later they did a remake with Ingrid Bergman, and they basically bought all of the negatives and all of the copies of the original and destroyed them. So that they were like going, well, we're doing a remake, but we don't want anyone to really know about the plot, or even though it was a play and it was in Broadway and the West End and all this stuff, they said, we don't really want anyone to know anything about it, so what we'll do is we'll buy all of the prints and the negatives of the original, we'll destroy them so that that's no longer available, and then we'll do a remake. And they did the remake, and it won loads of Oscars. And people say, well, the remake's not as good as the original. And I haven't seen the remake yet, but by all accounts, the remake is just every bit as good as the original, but in different ways. In actual fact, when I watched the original, basically they don't make any pretense that the husband is gaslighting the wife. So basically you know right from the start that he's fucking around with that.
Oh, mind. Okay, it's not a mystery.
It's not a mystery. There is a mystery, but that's not the mystery. And when we came out, I said, I wonder if there's a way of doing that film where it's a mystery, where you think that she's genuinely losing her mind, and then the twist is the fact that it's the husband. And apparently that's what the 1944 remake is more like. And you go, oh, right, well, they've already thought of that. But there's this amazing shot, which is so... I just thought it was incredible for its time, which is sort of patronising, but you just like, it feels like such a modern device where, because silent movies only just start where they give you all the information in sort of like text screens.
Yeah.
So it's set 20 years ago, It's set in Edwardian England, Edwardian London, and it's set 20 years in the past of the film. And there's a thing that happens that sets up the film, and then there's sort of like it's set in Pimlico Square, and there's like this garden, like Albert Square. There's like this garden area in the middle of this square of townhouses, and they show the townhouse, and then they sort of like pan the camera down, and then they show these two workers that are planting a tree, and then the camera fades. The camera does a crossfade, and the tree is just a big tree now.
Yes.
And then they don't like say 20 years later, but they show that these guys planting a tree, and then they show the tree just sort of like 20 years later that now the tree's really big.
Mm. Don't tell, show. That's what they say, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's a really good, it's a really, really neat device.
It was really good, and you just don't, and like there's just all sorts of bits like that in the first half of the film specifically. Where you just go, that's incredible. It was mind-blowing. I just loved it. And like from a filmmaking point of view, it was great. And then from a story point of view, it was really tense, and it was just really great. And then from like a historical point of view, it's about this guy that's abusing his wife. And you go, in terms of gender politics, this film is so far ahead of its time, like technically and politically, and and the acting is just incredible. Mm. It's almost like pantomime acting in some places, where he's so evil, and you come out of it and you're so angry with him. And he's like almost the most evil character you've ever. He doesn't go around sort of like blowing stuff up and murdering people and all of this stuff. He's just mentally fucking with her mind the whole time, and it's such a stressful film to watch because she feels like she's losing her mind. And you just think, yeah, God, what a cunt. it was so good. It was just such a good film. Anyway, I wanted to just say, I was meant to say it in the first half and I didn't. But I recommend it to everyone. Mm. And I want to see the remake as well.
Are we able to see what the name of the actress was in that film?
Can we look up what the original cast for the 1940 Gaslight was? Because it's not Ingrid Bergman, is that what you're saying? I do find it's weird that Ingrid Bergman and Ingmar Bergman
aren't related.
Well, they're not related, and also it's kind of like you go, oh, so what, she directed The Seventh Seal? And you go, no, that's a different guy. There's a documentary about him coming out.
Yeah.
I could live at the BFI.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Do you have some kind of membership there?
I do have a membership card. Mm-hmm. You've got to pay for that. Anyone can do that. I mean, I don't get special treatment.
You should, though.
I should do.
Yeah.
Should do.
What's that then?
I've got a question here. We haven't really dug into anything, but I'll just ask you a quick question. This is from the Ridley's Games Room Movie Buff. I think this is a very relaxed episode. I think both me and Nathaniel admittedly are very tired for some reason. It's probably because we were up all night fucking.
Each other.
Yeah. Anton Walbrook
played
1940 Gaslight. Paul Mallon is the name of the bad guy, right?
And not a great surname.
Bella Mallon. And all the way through it, they keep saying Mallon. And you keep saying, are you saying Melon? It's kind of like, it's one of the things. Diana Wynyard. As Bella Mallon.
It's not the actress I was thinking about, because I was listening to this documentary about the woman who sort of set the ideal for the kind of blonde, ditzy archetype Hollywood. So it was pre-Marilyn Monroe, and like Marilyn Monroe almost based her image off of this actress.
Maybe like Mae West or someone like that, maybe?
No, it was Kim something, I believe. Oh. This is not contributing in any way.
Jane Mansfield? Jane Mansfield was after Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
Jane Mansfield was very much the Anna Nicole Smith, the Marilyn Monroe's Pamela Anderson, I feel.
Yes.
Who else would it be? What did you say, Rita Hayworth?
No, I didn't.
Who was the woman who had the long hair?
Oh, yeah.
That was basically...
Veronica Lake?
Veronica Lake.
Oh, no, it wasn't her.
Ah.
Sorry.
Veronica Lake. She's basically got the Jessica Rabbit hair.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not red, it's blonde. But that's what they did. Basically, Lake's hair is basically... Jessica Rabbit's hair is basically exactly based on Veronica Lake's hair. Anyway, we've got the Ridley's Games Room... Hang on a minute. So what are you talking about? You watched a documentary that was saying about the precursor to Marilyn Monroe.
I listened to a documentary on the radio, on the Swedish radio. It was it's a Swedish radio program about style, and so they decided to talk about like female comedians, and she was one of the first in Hollywood that sort of set kind of like that was a funny lady. And was successful at it.
Okay.
But then she died because she they made her, she had blonde, oh, she didn't have blonde hair originally.
She died of peroxide poisoning.
Yeah, something like that, because they would make, what is it?
I mean, this should be really easy to Google.
Okay.
Okay.
And she got headaches and stuff, and then she died.
Oh, what a tragic.
That's awful.
Yeah, yeah. She was like 30-something.
I mean, Natalie is now sort of like discussing which words she should put into the Google Googleator to find out who this person is.
I could. My phone is in there, so I could get my phone and look it up.
Who? What?
Yes, Jean Harlow.
Jean Harlow.
Yeah. Jean Harlow.
Jean Harlow. There we go. Not Kim.
Sorry.
That was a bit of a... Yeah. Jean Harlow. Oh, great.
Jean Harlow, yeah.
Right.
So it was quite a tragic end to her
Can
her
we get a picture
career.
Of Jean Harlow up?
How old was she?
For us. How old was she? Yeah, just give us some Jean Harlow facts. Is it J-E-A-N or is it G-E-N-E? That's how my mum spells her name. Not how my mum spells her name, how her name was spelt for her, and she's just adopted that spelling. She hasn't thought out of the box at all with it.
Are you a big movie fan?
Me? I'm not. I haven't seen the classics, I will say. I like films, but I'm not a very sophisticated. I don't have a very sophisticated taste.
That's all right. Let's find out how much you know about films with some movie trivia.
Okay.
You've got to beat Daniel Cook with one.
One. Cookie.
Jordan Brooks got quite a few, didn't he?
Yeah, he got most of them, I think.
So smart.
Who plays Kristen? Is it Kristen or Kirsten Stewart?
Kristen Stewart, is it?
Who plays Kristen Stewart's mother in the 2002 movie Panic Room?
I have no idea.
Oh, is it A, Jennifer Aniston, B, Angelina Jolie, C, Meryl Streep, or D, Jodie Foster?
I mean, it feels like it's Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like it's Jodie.
Feels like it.
What made you feel it was Jodie Foster?
Because I think Meryl Streep is too big to be in a film called Panic Room with Kristen Stewart at that time, because Kristen Stewart was not that popular, or not, her fame wasn't that big at that time.
Good.
And like now.
Jennifer Aniston, it sounds like a serious film, and Jennifer Aniston doesn't really do those.
Well, not back then.
And Angelina Jolie was married to, or she was busy being like a humanitarian.
I think Angelina Jolie back then was still with Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, was she? Yeah.
Maybe. Billy Bob Thornton is frightened of antiques. That's my favourite thing. He doesn't like anything old.
Does he?
He's terrified.
It's haunted?
Or something. I don't get
how he gets his cock out.
That's amazing.
How does he get his cock out and go for a piss?
Tweezers.
Fuck it.
But modern tweezers. Like he gets like a pair of tongs.
He just aims and.
My cock is positively antiquated. Who plays the junior member of staff in The Devil Wears Prada?
It's Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Yes.
Get extra points for not needing the... Billy Bob Thornton has a fear of antique furniture. Oh.
Okay.
So, that's probably doesn't have funny. A problem antique with his own furniture. Genitals. Who stars... imagine getting on Antiques Roadshow saying...
How much is that worth?
Have a look at what did you give me for that?
How much shall I insure this for? it's got very laddish.
Who stars?
Tom Jones should do that.
Yeah, he should. I mean, his is antique.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And valuable, I would think.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's probably, I imagine...
Don't get many of them for the pound. For the pound? To the pound.
To the pound.
Have you guys spoken about his marriage? That's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad. His wife is very sad, I think.
Oh. Because I thought they had a long-standing marriage. Oh, but she was always playing away, was he?
He was always away, yeah. And she just kind of became like a hermit in her Los Angeles house.
Oh, that is sad.
It's very sad. I think she died. Is she alive? I can't remember.
I think think she may have died.
I think she died.
Yeah, apparently.
She died. Mm. Oh. That was tragic.
It is.
Oh, well, back to movie trivia.
Also, Billy Bob Thornton has an irrational fear, I would say, of Komodo dragons.
And apparently, Megan Fox hates paper.
Oh my God! Think of the state of her ass.
Does she get jealous?
Hell. Megan Fox, Matthew McConaughey is scared of revolving doors. No, they're not. These are just things that people say. How does Megan Fox read a script? Okay, we've all got iPads, I suppose. But like, fucking hell. Matthew McConaughey does not have an irrational fear of revolving doors. He's just like a little bit like edgy when he gets near him because he's a bit worried that he might get trapped. It's like he's not scared. It's just something that people say to make them feel interesting.
I'm scared of herpes.
Is this McConaughey hasn't worn deodorant in 20 years?
Oh, really?
Oh.
I don't think he needs it though, does he?
Well, you know what? I guess if you're showering every day and washing, you're probably all right for a bit. But I reckon there must be times when you're a bit like, no, come on, Matthew.
When Rin Tin Tin died at the age of 16, she went over to the house and cradled the dog's head in her lap as he passed away.
Is that Jean Harlow? Or Matthew McConaughey?
I thought that was Nicole Kidman. Sorry, these are two different bits. Right. You're scared of herpes?
Yeah.
What's wrong with them?
I don't want them. I feel like it would just be a lifelong hassle to deal with.
Isn't herpes just cold sores?
It is, yes, and we all apparently have it, but then something needs to trigger it, and usually that's somebody else's.
Well, they say, don't they, because it was always the kissing disease. So is it someone else who's got the combining thing?
Yeah, something like that.
That makes you gives you a cold sore.
That's weird, isn't it? Whenever I get a KFC, I get a side of coleslaw. Who stars? Fucking
yes.
Tenuous. Who stars in 2000? Whenever I get a KFC, maybe once a year, I would say. And it's always a lonely one.
Do you live near one?
No, but everyone lives near one now that they're on Deliveroo or whatever
that's
it's
true.
On.
That's
I think
true.
It's on Just Eat, Deliveroo, and probably Uber Eats. Oh. God, I said this on stage today. What's the most you've ever spent at McDonald's by yourself?
Oh, I've gone to two McDonald's in one night.
I remember on a low point, me and my girlfriend at the time were on our way to have Sunday lunch with her family. And on the way, we stopped in the McDonald's and had a McDonald's on our way to lunch. Oh, my God.
That is low.
Oh, my God.
Knowing you're going to eat soon.
Yeah, I was just really, really hungry. It was probably only a quick cheeseburger. Not like a meal, but still. I only remember that the other day. Why did you go to two McDonald's in one night? Well, it's a separate one so that they didn't shame you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you're back.
Yeah. I went to one in the town in London town, and then I got on the bus, and then I was like, I kind of want some more. And then I got off at an earlier stop than my house and went and got more.
I don't think that's that bad.
That's not that bad.
No,
and also you're walking as well. You did a bit of walking. Did a bit of walking.
Yeah.
I did a Deliveroo. I was very low, and I didn't want to leave the house, and I Deliverooed a McDonald's. I spent more money than I thought was possible. It was £30.
What, on a solo McDonald's?
That's a lot of McDonald's. What did you get, Nick?
Well, I think I probably really wanted some. I can't remember, but I don't really like Big Macs. But I think every so often you go, I bet a Big Mac would be quite nice, and then you have one and you go, oh, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's never as nice as just getting a 99p cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I don't like McDonald's. I don't like... We were talking about Super Size Me last week, weren't we? I don't really like McDonald's, but every so often you do get kind of like a... I'm not really into, like, burgers or... You know, when I was doing Eat Your Heart Out and...
So you're also on.
which you were on.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and remember we went to that place and...
The lovely roastery, what was it called? It was called Roast, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I had a roast dinner burger.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And what did you have?
I think I had the duck or something.
Yeah, you did, yeah. It was nice there.
It was really
nice. The guy
nice.
Was really nice as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they gave us wine. Wine for days, didn't they?
Yeah, and then... And then, because we'd eaten, we went to the pub for lunch because we'd already eaten. You have to break for lunch. When we were doing that, people were like, oh, that's nice. You get to eat burgers every day, do you? And I was just like, why does everyone assume that I'd like burgers? I don't like burgers. But every so often I fancy McDonald's. So I reckon what I would have done is I've got a cheeseburger meal.
Yeah, but that's going to be £4. It?
Yes. This is what's awful about it. How do you spend £30?
That's what I can't figure out. I'm trying to figure it out.
Oh, yeah. You must have gotten like so many nuggets. Nuggets, probably.
What would you have got? Like 20 nuggets?
Oh, they do have that box of 20 nuggets.
Yeah.
That's like £5, I think.
I would have got, I definitely got like a chicken salad.
Well, that's good, healthy, isn't it?
That's so to go part, with it. Yeah.
I got a donut.
A donut. I forgot about the sweets.
I got an apple pie.
Wow.
I got another, like, this was years ago, right? But I got but not so long ago that it wasn't on Deliveroo. And I got a chocolate milkshake, and maybe a strawberry milkshake.
Two milkshakes.
And then what else would you have got? A chicken burger maybe? Or a chicken
cheese
wrap.
Melts.
A chicken wrap. Cheese melts, what, the jalapeno cheese melts?
They do. Well, they do mozzarella ones now, which is just fried cheese, basically, and it's just amazing.
Did
you eat it all, though?
I know we're not supposed to like it, but I do like it. Whenever I go to McDonald's, I go, oh, this is lovely. I don't have that thing where I like feel like, oh, it's really horrible. I always go, this is nice.
Do you know what I prefer to McDonald's?
Go on.
Those microwavable Rustlers.
Oh dear. Burgers. No. I don't know if I can have them.
Oh my God.
I've never had one.
I had a double one once and it made me feel sick.
Oh.
No. Morgan Spurlock?
Yeah, I was like Morgan Spurlock. My friend has a great story where when he was at school, he went camping with his friends. The teacher took him out. And every day they were staying in this campsite, but they knew that, like, within sort of 10 minutes walk of this campsite was a McDonald's. And so every day when they were camping on this school trip, they were going, sir, can we go to McDonald's? And the teacher was going, no, that's not the idea of this. We're camping, so you can't go to McDonald's. And every day they'd go, but sir, can we go tonight? And he'd be like, no, of course, that's not the point of camping. We've got to make our own food. Then at the day, and as a special treat on the last day, the teacher said, for a special treat, it's your last night, we're all going to go to McDonald's, and it's going to be a special treat for me because I've never been. So they all went to decamp to McDonald's, and they all went up and they all started ordering their burgers and things. And when it was the teacher's turn to get it, he didn't know what he was ordering, of course, and just went to the counter and said, hello, could I have a McDonald's, please? And that is one of my favourite stories. He just thought it was a thing called a McDonald's. The order. I'd like a McDonald's, please.
That's nice, actually.
It is. It's a sweet story.
Like, give me the works.
Yeah. And I think that's what you did. Can I have a McDonald's, please? Now, yeah, it's £30 for all that.
I just want to say that I think that in my life it is the worst thing I've ever done. Which is spend £30 in a McDonald's.
I still can't get my head around it.
I can't get my head around it. I was very low.
It's very impressive.
I didn't eat it all in one go.
Because if I get a McDonald's, it's always like £4.89 or something. And you go, sure.
I mean, that's the reason. 99p, thank you.
Yeah, it's cheap.
£1.98 for two cheeseburgers. Bloody hell.
Yeah. The idea that there's 30 of those. So that's 15. No. That's 30 cheeseburgers, the equivalent of. You must have been like Donald Trump in that picture.
I had I was feeding an NFL team. Was it NFL? It was, I remember I went to Egypt with, me and my ex-girlfriend went to Egypt together. We went to Sharm el-Sheikh, and it was just after some terrorist activity, so we got really cheap tickets, and I went away for a week. Have I told you this before?
No.
And we were in this hotel, And
you'd already booked it, though. You didn't go because it was cheap, because it's... Oh, was that where you went?
So no, we went to... It was just after Edinburgh, and and we went, and it was really cheap. We couldn't quite work out why it was so cheap. And then it was like, oh, right, it's because of this, but we've booked it now. And when we got there, you couldn't visit any of the things. You couldn't visit the Sphinxes or the pyramids or Moses Mount or anything. It was because everything was shut down because of the terrorism. So so we were trapped in this, what do you call it? It was meant to be like a five-star hotel. It wasn't five-star. It was full board. So that all of the meals were there. And we were eating these, and very quickly, we both got severe food poisoning.
Right? Oh, God.
And we were basically, this is a good way of getting to know your partner very quickly. Was, you go on holiday with them with a single toilet in a hotel room, and you both get food poisoning. And basically, you're both tag teaming each other. It's just, it was awful. And you're also, you're really ill. So you're Catherine Wheeling all day. You're being sick and shitting.
And there's probably not much sort of soundproofing in those.
This is just awful. It was, for me, to be fair, I don't think she got food poisoning until quite late on. And you were eating these weird kind of things, and you go, oh, I've never eaten sort of Egyptian food before. And this must be like a local delicacy. It was kind of like this weird kind of like, this weird sort of like thing. It was like this sauce. It was like this white gelatinous kind of chickeny kind of it was like blancmange, and I was sort of like gave that a try, and it was only later on that I realised it was it was the hotel's version of what they thought cream of chicken soup was. And you go, oh, God. It was a terrible... And we were there.
So it's like they just heard the names of other foods and go, what would that be like? It was, I'd imagine it's probably like this, right?
I didn't realise I was eating at the kind of like... I'm very adventurous when it comes to the food, and I didn't realise that I was eating at basically their Western buffet. And I was like, oh, right, this is okay. And anyway, so I was really ill, and the food was inedible at this hotel, and we were sort of trapped there, and we didn't know what to do. And we could go for walks, and it would just be kind of like just miles of beach, and you know, you go like, and every time we went out to eat, it was kind of like there was some problem with the food, and it was just like, and it was miserable. We were there for like a week, and we didn't have one good meal, and we were sort of like trapped in this kind of. This five-star paradise, but it wasn't. It was terrible. And then we went around the corner one day, and there was a McDonald's and a Hard Rock Cafe.
You saw the golden arches.
And there was like a KFC and a Chinese takeaway.
If it was The Simpsons, they'd also have a Shake Shack, but Shake could be spelt S-H-E-K.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
What they do on The Simpsons.
Yeah, very good. But my point was that we were there for a week. And it was impossible. And then, like, on the last day, we turned a corner, and it was kind of like, oh, we just didn't go that direction.
Oh, no.
It was like 10 feet away. It was like anything that you could possibly, you know. I'm not into junk food, but at that point, we were just like, oh, God, can we just have something that is, like, edible?
Oof. Egypt. I tell you what, with all that food poisoning... No wonder the Sphinx doesn't have a nose. Am I right, guys?
I'm not sure. What are you a fan of?
I'm so tired.
Yeah.
No, I'm a... What am I a fan of? I do like food in general. I really like food.
Do you like all kinds of food? So you do like junk food as well? You've got like... You're not a connoisseur, or are you also a kind of... Oh, I'm a gourmet. I'm a...
I appreciate the food and the context it comes in. So you kind of have to do that, I think.
What's the worst thing you've ever done in terms of food?
Oh, well, every day. Just eating after I'm supposed to. I think food, sometimes when you eat bad food, it's almost as if you want to punish yourself. So I do that a lot.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
I think it's tough with gigs and things, though, right?
Yeah.
Because it's either too early or it's sort of too late.
Oh, right? Yeah. Well, when me and Trent went on tour, there was like, you could always have a curry. You could always have an Indian, but like 5 days of that, you're kind of like,
you can't keep doing this.
Sharing a car with David Chen. You're kind of like to the point where it's just like, I can't eat any more curry. I can't do that anymore. But with gay, and also it's famous for like roads, what do you call them? You know, when you're driving and you go past service stations. Mm. Yeah. So you're always eating kind of like badly out of.
Yeah.
Although I find that I always go to Marks and Spencer's and get kind of like.
Do you know what? I don't, because I can't do that thing, because I know when there's the option of something like a KFC or something, I go, well, I could get a salad, but that's right there.
Yeah.
I don't like, if that was my only option, I'd be like, okay, I guess I'll get a sandwich from M&S in a train station or something. But like when I know there's something like there that I could just throw a stone and hit a KFC, it just feels mad to me not to have it.
Yeah.
It's like insane.
It is. It's this I just want to be myself.
Mm.
Just let me be.
You're just pretending to be someone that wouldn't have a KFC
exactly,
otherwise.
Exactly, and I'm never satisfied. And then after I get dropped off, I still go and get like a late night chicken or something. Yeah,
I find with gigs or something, if I eat at 5, which is about as early as you probably can, before like without being bloated or something before you do it, then it's pointless, because by the time the gig finishes, it's like hungry now.
Yeah.
Hungry now, so it's pointless trying to eat early.
I get too nervous to eat before gigs. So yeah. It was a small gig last night and I was really nervous. But it was also like new. It wasn't like a new material night, but it was like a night where you're talking about issues.
Mm.
And so it was kind of like you're very vulnerable on stage.
Mm.
And I was really nervous. But yeah, I'm always nervous. I'm not a natural performer.
Mm.
I get terrified.
Are you not?
No, I'm like you.
Really?
I'm like the way that you've described yourself. I'm not like saying that I don't think you're a natural
performer. I don't think I am. I don't think it comes naturally to me at all. But then, I don't know. I think it's just sort of forcing yourself, isn't it, to do something.
Yeah, to be honest.
Do something you don't like.
We're very laid back in this episode.
We are. Is this all right?
I feel like this is the sort of episode that you put on if you need to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, good, because I do. So it's really handy for me.
I'm very glad to be the guest in this episode.
Good. Kylie Minogue is afraid of coat hangers.
Why is it? I'm not going to do that joke.
I can imagine what it may have been.
Megan Fox says that sometimes she has to have a cup of water nearby so she can thoroughly wet her finger before turning a page if she's doing a lot of reading at once.
Because she's afraid of paper?
Is that because
so she's rather touching wet fingers? She's
afraid of paper or she's afraid of her own spit?
I don't know. Megan Fox, come on.
Are these cameras on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is being beamed by satellite.
Normally, me and Nathaniel, they use a little clip of show in the week demonstrate, this is how much fun.
What a fun show.
But I really am struggling to think what they're going to use this week.
Yeah.
Not because of you. So you're a fan of staying in bed for as long as I can because I'm lazy.
Uh-huh.
Is this an early day for you? Is this a?
It is. Yeah.
This is you're out of bed soon.
Yeah, that's why I'm a bit.
Cutting your own hair because it saves you money, even though it makes you sound and look, I imagine, like a crazy person.
I just cut my own hair this week.
That's great.
Thank you.
I used to cut my own hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I've got to find a press photo, like a photo. And so you Google it, Google images, and you go, and there's so many photos where you just go, cut my own hair on that one.
Never done it. I'd be too frightened. I think I'd make a mess of it. I know you're meant to cut in a weird diagonal way, aren't you?
Yeah, you're supposed to. It's easier than you think. And you're just supposed to just do it a little at a time, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd get a little bit like that. And I would twist it, and then I would twist it, and I'd cut it, so that it would be all like layered.
Yeah,
exactly.
Do you know what I mean? If you cut it like that and you go like that, you've got like a straight line. Yes. But if you twist it round and round and round like that, then it's all kind of like spiraled and it all kind of still looks a little bit
natural. I get my hair cut by a Greek Cypriot man who is probably in his 80s, who, like all hairdressers, is a terrible advert for hairdressers because always have like comb overs or terrible haircuts. But he's a really nice man, and he touches my head when he washes my hair, and I like it. It's very pleasurable.
It's really, really nice. I really like your head.
And he also gives me a sweet at the end.
Does he?
Yeah, he gives me a little boiled sweet.
Didn't we talk about this the other week?
Oh, maybe we did, yeah.
I really love having my head touched.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, people do the kind of, oh, it's nice.
You don't get the same sensation when you do it on your own.
No, but have you ever had one of them kind of like head...
That freaks me out, though.
Head, what's that?
It's a hand... You get have a handle and it's got these kind of like claws on it.
Yeah.
And you put it... On the, and then you do that, and it basically it's like having someone run their fingers through your head.
Oh, is it like when someone pretends there's an egg on your head and splats it?
I don't know.
No,
don't know
it's
what
more
that is.
Like...
You know when someone goes, oh, I've got an egg, and they just do that thing where they...
Don't know what that is.
Okay.
It's called a scalp massager. Okay. Oh, my God. Right, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
A scalp massager?
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Weird. Okay.
Do that as a clip. That's pretty good.
We'll
just do that bit.
Fan of hotel baths always make me feel fancy, and I try to not think of all the previous guests who've been there.
Yeah. Who've menstruated in that tub.
Do you like... Do you have a bath at home, though, or do you only have a shower?
I don't have a bath at home. I only shower at home.
But if it's in a hotel, you want... Because it's there.
I save it for the hotel,
but that's another sort of food thing, because if I'm in a hotel... If I'm in a B&B and I know breakfast is included, I will set an alarm...
Yeah, and get up and have it.
And, like, sort of come down to this shambles where I just look like I've got, like, hair across my face or something to eat food and then maybe go back to bed afterwards.
Yeah.
Because I cannot resist the idea of not having a breakfast. It's in the...
Can you not face away from the camera, Evelyn?
Face away?
Yeah, there's a camera there.
No, not face away. Face away from the camera.
Can you not face away from the camera?
Okay.
I think it's...
I'm facing it now. Does this feel more natural?
I mean, are you going to use this clip where we're talking about baths? because I just want to say, is there some place where you've logged every single show that we've ever done where all of the footage exists?
Wow.
I mean, you haven't pressed the button. I don't know what that was.
Is it personal? Is it a personal archive?
Okay.
Wow. So it could be like movies every week, movie length.
God, wow. Feature length videos of the actual podcast, like Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Does he have that?
Yeah, I watched the Joe Rogan show on YouTube. Mm. Not always. That's our fan mail. Do you want to
open it? Can I open it? Yeah, you can open it, of course. Sure.
I'm very excited.
We got something sent to us this week. We're seeing what it is. We don't know what it is.
Oh.
Milky bar buttons.
Oh, there's a message here.
Oh.
Do you want to read it? Should I read it?
Who are they for?
Matt and Nick.
Mint M&M's. Nat wasn't going to leave you out. Magic buttons, which became calorie free after a run. Besides which, Nick has a sharing pack of mint M&Ms, and we both know he's not going to share them.
Oh.
Kay. And then, Nick, aren't you lucky? I'm a compassionate and forgiving human being. You're forgiven. Let's make an effort and forget it, but don't... I don't know.
I think this is because I called Karen a cunt 2 weeks ago.
That's how you get fans.
Let's move on and forget it, but don't do it again. Yeah, sorry for calling you a cunt, Karen, and thanks for the mint M&Ms. it's time for the game.
Yes, let's
this
play a game.
This has been such a weird episode.
I've quite liked it.
Oh, we never touched on John Mayer, who's my favourite. But let's play the game.
Okay, let's see how much time we got at the end.
No, I'm kidding.
Who's John Mayer?
He's a musician.
Right.
There we go. It's the game. So you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before.
Oh, gosh.
Beginning with John C. Reilly. You got him in your head?
Yeah.
Is he better or worse than Bill Murray?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he's worse than Bill Murray. Because
he is worse. John he is. C. Don't Reilly. Have to say why.
John
but
C. Reilly
great.
Is worse than Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Bill Murray is the almighty.
Is Kate Blanchett better or worse than Bill Murray?
Worse.
She is worse. Is Heather Graham better or worse than Kate Blanchett?
Oh, worse.
Oh, I do like Heather Graham.
I do.
She's naked in a lot of things.
Is Mark Wahlberg better or worse than Heather Graham?
Oh, Mark Wahlberg's
the worst.
He is. Is Julianne Moore better or worse than Mark Wahlberg?
Oh, she's better.
Much better.
Oh, you've seen Boogie Nights.
I have, yeah. I watched Boogie Nights the other day. Tom Hanks. Is Tom Hanks better or worse than Julianne Moore?
Best. Tom Hanks is the best.
I mean, I like Julianne Moore. I'm going to say worse than Julianne
Moore. Nah, he's better.
Tom Hanks is the best.
Is Meg Ryan better or worse than Tom Hanks?
Oh, I think she's better. Just from her.
Sure?
Do you think Meg Ryan is better than Tom Hanks?
I mean, have you seen her in Harry Met Sally and Seattle? And,
I mean, she.
Yeah, go on, name one more.
You've Got Mail.
No! You've Got Mail don't count. That's a terrible film.
She is worse. Is Daniel Day-Lewis better or worse than Meg Ryan?
Oh, he's better.
Better.
Yeah, he's better.
And is Philip Seymour Hoffman better or worse than Daniel Day-Lewis?
He's dead!
Yeah.
So he's worse?
He is worse. I don't like him as much.
He is worse.
I like him.
He's not as good. It's a high card.
High card. Eight. That's a good score.
Wow. You join Claudie Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Shorrock. That's four each. And Mark Smith and Carl Theobald with eight in the eight club. You didn't get as many as Daniel Cook, Daniel Lawrence Taylor, Michael Legg and Solomon Gray, or John Niven and Sean Harris with 10 each.
Yes. Wow.
Daniel Cook and that group were 9. You're 8. You got more, though, than Hayley Campbell, Brett Goldstein, Charlie Higson, Matthew Holness, Ian Smith, Josh Whitaker on 7, Junk Women, Self and Crime, Colin Holt, Andy Kindler, Merritt Larwood, Lucy Porter, Richard Sandling, Mark Simmons, David Trent on 6, Yasmin Akram, Rob Deering on 5, Jack Perry and Bunny Galore on 4, and fucking... with 3 points, Sam Ashurst.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
I'm so glad that I can beat David Trent.
What were you going to say about your crush?
John Mayer. Yeah. I want to see his penis.
Who doesn't?
I don't know who he is.
Can we get a picture of John Mayer up?
His penis. Is it a picture, of his penis?
One more question before we go. Uh-huh. Who stars in the 2014 movie American Sniper?
Bradley Cooper.
You do know this. All right. We got some more time. What role does Orlando Bloom play in Troy?
Oh, he plays Prince Paris.
Oh my God! I mean, you're fucking good at this.
Yeah, this is fun. I'm not gonna get this one.
What sorts of shop does Meg Ryan own in You've Got Mail?
Oh, a bookshop.
Oh my God! Okay, who stars with Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge?
Oh, the guy, what's his name? The Irish guy, Ewan McGregor. I mean, the Scottish guy he is.
Wow. How is actor Liam Neeson, how is actor Liam Hemsworth related to Chris Hemsworth?
Brother.
I mean, Sleepless in Seattle ends in which city?
Oh, in New York.
Who starred off Dustin Hoffman in Kramer versus Kramer?
Oh, Meryl Streep.
Oh my God. Blythe Danner is the mother of which famous movie actress?
Blythe Danner.
Oh, yeah, this is
the
one.
I don't know that.
Oh, do you want to... Liv Tyler, B. Kate Hudson, C. Anne Hathaway, D. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Oh, yes. Fuck. Helen Mirren is so scared of phones, she tries not to answer calls and refuses to return them. I mean, that's just being antisocial, isn't it? That's just being
unprofessional.
What Scottish historical figure does Mel Gibson play in Braveheart?
Oh, I don't know.
Clues in the name. It's Braveheart.
Yeah, Braveheart. Oh, is his name Braveheart?
Yeah, his name was Braveheart.
A bit hurried at the end, don't we? That's what happened to this show.
A bit hurried. Today I would say it was a 3-star start and a 5-star close. Right.
Thank you very much for coming in, Evelyn.
Thanks for coming, Evelyn.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like that last hour just flew by.
Absolutely.
The whole show flew by today. Are we going to finish? What's your favourite song? Oh, we're going to end on your favourite song, Evelyn.
Slater Kinney.
Nah, not really.
No. Yeah. Well, I like this one.
What's your favourite?
I like that song too.
Right, hey.
To be an end of time, please.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.